We turn now to a topic that many of us do our best to avoid, end-of-life decisions. It was in 1986 that Dave Campschulte discovered that his longtime good friend Phil was dying of lung cancer, even though Phil had never smoked a cigarette in his life. That experience of being with Phil in those final days launched Dave into a life's path as a hospice volunteer, realizing that we could all benefit from more preparation, more conversation about something that will, like it or not, enter the lives of each and every one of us, and that is death. Dave has taken the insights gained from his hospice volunteering, and he's put them into a book entitled I'm Dying to Talk with You, 25 Years of Conversations on End-of-Life Decisions. And Dave joins us now from the studios of Grand Valley State University. Welcome to Stateside, Dave.
Thanks, Cindy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, isn't this a pretty tough sell to start out by reminding us, yes, you, dear reader, are going to die?
It is a tough sell. A lot of people don't even want to book me because the word dying is in the conversation of my presentation.
But your message in your book is, yeah, you're going to die and we should be talking about it, right?
Right. There's actually three messages. The first one is to let people know there are options. Sometimes people don't even know that hospice exists and that that's an option. And the second message is that, you know, let's take some time to reflect on our own choices because we're going to die. And the third one, and I think the most important one, because is to help people have a conversation with somebody. Think of all the people that we know that are going to be dying in our lives, and they're scared too. And so if we can give ourselves some tools, we can have that conversation.
These are insights that you have developed in years of hospice volunteering because you make it pretty clear as you really encounter death back in 86 with your friend, you wish you'd done better.
Exactly. You know, when Phil was dying, I felt at the time I was doing everything I could for him, but I felt like if I had just been a little more prepared, I could have done so much more. And that's why I ended up volunteering for hospice, because I knew that death was going to come knocking on my door again.
But how do we get past what I think most of us tend to do, which is to not think about death until it lands right in our laps through illness or accident or some tragedy? It really is. There's a saying in Ireland to put it on the long finger, put it off, put it off. And don't most of us do that?
I think we do. There's two ways I think people look at life. One is it's a line. I was at one end of the line, you were born, and the other end of the line is death, and it's so far out there, people don't even want to think about it and
right.
To avoid it. And the other one is a circle of life. You know, it's a natural occurrence. We saw that so much when we lived on the farms back in the early 1900s, and it was in between crops and animals and grandma and grandpa living with us. It was just in our face all the time. It was just a natural part of life.
So what price do we pay, Dave Campschulte, as you have worked over the years with dying patients in hospice work? What price do we pay by not having those conversations about death with our loved ones and our friends?
Well, I think we pay a huge financial price from the cost of healthcare, because so much of the healthcare dollar is spent in the last 6 months of life trying to keep somebody alive when they're terminally ill. And number two, just a peace of mind. People talk about a peaceful death and being with family at home is instead of trying to keep somebody alive at the hospital.
Based on the knowledge you have now, give us kind of a sense of your friend Phil's death and what you did then, and then with your new insights, what you might do differently.
Sure. When Phil rapidly became more ill, he ended up in the hospital, and his wife spent two overnights with him, which completely exhausted her. And what happened is that the social worker came into the room with Phil's family and a few friends and said, have you ever heard of hospice? This is back in 1986 when hospice was relatively new. Mm-hmm. And we said, no, what is it? And they explained it to us, and they said, this is a wonderful thing. And Phil spent his last 2 days at home. And there was no prior conversation. This was just happened to happen out of the clear blue sky. And so what I have done now is to try to initiate these conversations. I understand, for example, my dad, I said, I understand you're going to be you're terminally ill. What is it? How would you like to spend your last days? And he said, I don't want to be in a hospital. I don't want to be in a nursing home. I want to be at my house.
Hmm. So you just kind of took the bull by the horns and right there. And it sounds like he was ready with an answer.
You know, Cindy, that's most people I find have thought about it, but they just have never been given the opportunity to state it, their wishes, and they have to be invited. They have to be asked. I can't tell you time and time again where people have said, yeah, this is what I want. But up until that point, they have never expressed it.
And in your book, I know you gave us some very helpful prompts, some helpful things that we might say to begin the conversation with a loved one who's facing a terminal illness. So give us some ideas of things that will get that conversation going. You certainly had a good one with your father.
I really did. And another thing is, what is your concept of hospice? A lot of people think, oh, hospice is just giving up, or hospice is even a form of suicide, or I'm going to be addicted to drugs. So I always ask people, rather than trying to explain what hospice is, I said, hospice is part of the plan here. What is your concept? And that way I can get a lot of myths and misinformation out of the way.
All right. So and by not having conversations, you give us the example of a woman who was dying of breast cancer, right, and did not have conversations and really wound up dying in a way that she would not have wanted.
Right. I asked her the same question I asked my dad. I understand you're terminally ill. How would you like to spend your last days? And she says, I want to get better. She'd been battling breast cancer for 15 years, and that was where she was coming from.
That's what she'd been doing. Yeah.
That's what she'd been doing. She'd been in remission coming back. And I said, well, if you couldn't get better, she says, I want to get better. Mm. And I knew at that point that we weren't going any further with that. And she ended up in the hospital, where the last place she wanted to be, and she ended up dying in the hospital there.
So I think I hear your message as I read your book, I'm Dying to Talk With You, is don't be afraid to open up that conversation. And I know I've seen it in my own family when grandma doesn't want to say anything to grandpa, even though everybody knows grandpa is very, very sick, but grandma doesn't want to bring it up because she just feels like that's throwing in the towel.
Or even more, I might upset grandpa. Mm-hmm. So often people want to protect people. You know, I don't want to upset them. I've had mm-hmm. these conversations many times with, have you talked to your kids about that? Oh, no, I couldn't do that. They might even cry, you know. And in our society, we don't want to cry. And I go and talk to the kids and say, have you talked to your dad? And they say, well, no, we might upset him. So it's like two ships passing in the night.
Now, in your book, I'm Dying to Talk With You, it's 25 years of conversations on end-of-life decisions. You spend a lot of time advising us on how to talk with loved ones, but you also focus on the kinds of conversations we kind of need to have with ourselves about what we do and don't want at the end of our lives. And you note that like 70% of us express some desire about what we do and don't want at the end of our life illness, but only 30% write anything down. Why is it so important to get that down in writing?
Well, because the default model is that the healthcare system is going to keep us alive unless they have some type of written instructions. So if you go into the emergency room, for example, and even though you may have thought about it, but they have not written it down, they're going to keep you alive even if that's against your wishes. So I always say it's a four-step process. Think about it. Think about the deaths you've seen and think about what you want. So often I go to examples. I say, I want that for me, or I don't want that for me. Talk about it with family members and other people, and then write it down, because it does not do any good unless it's written. And the fourth thing is to share it. It's so important to share it. A hand went up in one of my presentations, and the person said, you know, my dad never talked about it. He never wrote it down to our knowledge, and we had to make some decisions. 2 weeks later, we're cleaning out his box in his closet, and we found a 5-page document, and we did everything exactly the opposite that he wanted, but we didn't know because he didn't share it with anybody.
No. In fact, you talk about some very common themes as people review their lives. And it strikes me that the idea of expressing forgiveness and talking about how you'd like to be remembered, what a gift that is, and how very, very sad if those things go unexpressed until it's too late.
Exactly. I asked my participants in my workshops, what's your definition of a good death? And it's very interesting because they come up with a lot of different definitions. For one person, she says, I want to write a letter to all my grandkids to be given on their next birthday. For my father-in-law, he took me around and said, Dave, this is the water shut off. Dave, this is the gas shut off. Dave, this is where the taxes are. Very pragmatic. He knew his wife knew nothing about this. And for him, that was a peaceful thing to know that I knew that.
Dave, what do you feel that you've learned for yourself from your 25 years of hospice volunteering?
I've learned a lot, Cindy. Number one, I'm not afraid of death whatsoever. I've seen people die very peaceful, natural deaths, and I know it can be done. So that's the first and most important thing. The second one is to not hold back, to share my thoughts with people, to let them know I love them. So many people die with regrets. You know, the old regret, I wish I'd spent more time with my family, wish I'd spent more time with trips, but I never hear, I wish I'd spent more time at the office.
Dave Kampschulte is a grief counselor and a hospice volunteer. He runs the Amazing Circles workshops, and his book is I'm Dying to Talk with You, 25 Years of Conversations on End-of-Life Decisions. You can find out about Dave's work and his book through his website, amazingcircles.net. That's amazingcircles.net. Dave, thanks for talking with us today on Stateside.
Thank you, Cindy.